Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
All right, everyone, on today's episode of Nothing Major, it's Stockholm Week. We got some fun stories. Jack makes two finals there. Also, we've got the Six King Slam, and the four of us will build our perfect draws from a lot of guys across the history of tennis. And guys, this is a big one. We got Valentin Vacherot. He just won the Shanghai Masters event. John, Jack, and myself interview him. That's all on today's show, so let's get into it.
All right, everyone. As always, I've got John Isner, Jack Sock, Steve Johnson, Charlie Fox, and the team at SIFT. This week, it's big 250 week, not the most exciting week, but we've got Stockholm, Brussels, and Almaty. Am I saying that right, Stevie?
Yeah, that's what they were saying, you know, a tennis channel this week, so yeah.
Almaty in Kazakh. It used to be like Antalya or something.
That was in Turkey.
That was in Turkey.
That was a grass court tournament.
It was
in Turkey.
Astana.
No,
Astana, the Nur Sultan, now Almaty. They've like changed the name of the city three times.
Yeah, I think it's in the same place. They just changed the name of the city, I do believe.
You can do that.
Wait, what? It's not a different...
No, I think they just changed the name of the city like three times, yeah.
Yeah. We need a fan to fact check us on that.
Again, factually incorrect usually on this show, but I believe that's the case.
That's interesting.
Okay. It is very interesting. But anyway, this crew here, we were mostly a Stockholm crew this week. Let me start with Jack Sock. You finaled this two times?
Twice, yeah. Lost in back-to-back 15 and 16, back-to-back years.
You played Dimitrov in one of them and Berdych in one of them?
Played Berdych in the finals of 15 and Del Potro in the finals of 16 after an epic 250 first round. I'll never forget an Isner-Del Potro first round of a 250 in Stockholm.
Yeah, that sucked.
Ooh, which one of those finals, which year did you feel like you had the best chance to win? Which final was closer?
I think they were both relatively close. I think they were both like a 5-6 and maybe a 6-6 or a 5-5. Yeah. Probably, I don't know, Berdych was like, that was like, I feel like that was like prime Berdych. He was playing like, yeah, really well indoors there, just like slapping the ball like crazy. I probably felt a little bit better against Delpo the following year because I could try to maybe find the backhand, be a bit more aggressive. I feel like Berdych, I was a little more on my heels. Definitely had like the home crowd as well. I feel like, yeah, probably the Delpo year. And I think they're both close finals.
I feel like you love Stockholm. I feel like Jack would talk about Stockholm year-round.
I love Stockholm. I loved it. I was always looking forward to that. Even though it was a 250, because I loved the town. Like, you'd stay in that. See if I was even close on these, to be honest. No, actually, wow. It wasn't even close against Delpo. Or either. Never mind. Yeah, never mind.
I know.
One close set.
Maybe you serve for a first. Who knows?
Probably not. Yeah, I just loved the city there, and like out of the fall weather, I like the Euro fall trip, and it started in Stockholm always, and like you walk over to Old Town there in Stockholm, and dinners were awesome. You walk across that little bridge, I know, it was like cool architecture, and I know I sound like Riley right now, but it was cool.
No, it's a good tournament. Like, yeah, John, really you made the semifinals?
No, I there's nothing to talk about for me in Stockholm, just move on. I mean, Stevie? Seriously.
Yeah, it's like, a good.
The only thing, I mean, I'm sure I've mentioned on here, the fatty and me really love the Players Lounge of Stockholm. Those girls just baked pies all day.
Pies,
that's
yeah.
True.
So I would just meander up there after a first round loss to Radu Albot and just had pie for a week until I took another first round loss the following week. So that's kind of why, that's how I spent my time in Stockholm.
Jack's got the only like positive Stockholm memory because my one memory, I played it a handful of times, but you guys know this story. I think I've told it. Like, it was the year I was maybe ranked like 30 in the world, and I forgot to sign up for the main draw. So I was in the qualifying and then lost first round of qualifying, and then immediately went to the airport and flew home and pulled out of every tournament the rest of the year.
Jack, do you remember what we were doing during that match?
I remember yeah, us.
I know what you guys were
doing. Double Shanghai.
Double Shanghai.
We were in the lounge, the beautiful Shanghai lounge, where, you know, we weren't eating a big meal because we had the doubles final, you know, imminently. And in 30 minutes, the doubles final was starting. And so we go on live scores, and Stockholm qualies was going on. And we saw that you went down like 4-4 maybe to Zopp.
Yeah, Jürgen Zopp. He was ranked, I don't know what he's ranked, but 200 in the world or something.
Jürgen Zopp of Estonia. And I look at Jack and I'm like, golly, like we were both going to Stockholm after the doubles final, like that night. And we knew we weren't going to see you in Stockholm. And
or the I think rest we of both, the year.
And we actually kind of, we did say that you were going to pull out the rest of the year, and we were correct.
He was fired up prior to the match, I will say. Good positive energy in the locker room. Immediately took a 180 as soon as he stepped foot on the court and lost his serve.
Yeah, that's what happens. Occasionally you will see guys in qualies. You're like, why is that guy in qualies? He's ranked 40 in the world. If they didn't sign up for the tournament.
Yeah.
And then they didn't get a wild card, you can still go play qualies, because at the time, I don't know if it's still this way, qualies sign up was like literally until the day before, the night before. It was like an on-site use of sign in. So anyway, Jack was the big breadwinner of the Stockholm week of this crew of four here.
They did call it Stockholm one time.
Those courts were perfect for you, Jack. Like
yeah,
those
they
courts
were.
And the balls, like they, it was good, really good, like always slower. The balls would get really fluffy.
Yeah.
They played with the Robin Soderling had his own ball. I don't know if they're still playing with those balls.
They are.
But Robin Soderling had his own tennis ball, and it just got super, it got massive, right?
Yeah. I would never see a backhand. I could just hit forehands all
exactly.
day in there. It was like a slow
exactly.
indoor tournament. Loved it. The ball always felt really good in there. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Big fan of that week.
I guess the other tournament this week, and you want to, some people might look at it as like it's the biggest event of the week. Others look at it the complete opposite. It's the Sing Six Kings Slam. It's this week. It's Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday. Alcaraz, Sinner, Djokovic, Fritz, Zverev, Tsitsipas. It's kind of a unique format, but here's what I want to do. If you can do the Six Kings Slam tournament and put together any six players in the history of tennis, like we're making our own draw, who are the six that you guys are going to put in your field, and who have the two buys? Who wants to start? I can also start if we want.
How relevant do they have to be? Are we talking 80s, 90s? I'm just trying to get some ground rules.
You always ask these questions. Don't put in guys from like the 60s.
No, I'm not. But can you go 80s?
You can go 80s.
You can go Mac.
Look, you never know with Sam.
Don't put in like Fred Stolle, you know?
I wasn't going to go that far back. Just curious.
Bill Tilden.
Bill Tilden.
Over in Riyadh.
Ay, ay, ay.
Oh, man.
All right. My seeds are Federer 1 seed, Nadal 2 seed. And then I'm rounding those guys out with Novak Djokovic, John McEnroe, Andre Agassi, and Carlos Alcaraz. That's my just like field of six.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm going with.
I like that.
Yeah, you got to put a young Carlos in there. Mac, Andre, who doesn't want to watch then. Fed Nadal, just the classic, like maybe the best rivalry the game's ever seen. So that's my six if I can do any players of all time. Let's go, Stevie, you next.
Yeah, I'm going to go with just three like rivalries I'd like to see again. I want to go with Rafa and Roger. Then I'd like to go with, Borg, McEnroe. And then I'd like to go Agassi, Sampras. Like three like iconic rivalries all in one tournament.
I like that. So like we get great rivalries from the get-go with the first rounds.
Correct.
So you're pairing them against each other.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably give Roger and Rafa the buys, because I'd likely see them, you know, clipping the other two guys in the semis to then play a final. But I'd like to see, like, you know, Agassi Sampras play a first round to play Rafa, and then, you know, Borg McEnroe to play Raj, and kind of so on.
We were hoping for the Nadal-Bill Tilden first round matchup in your bracket.
I wasn't going to go that far back, okay, guy? Just checking.
All right, Jack, who you got?
Mine's very similar to yours. I had Roger, Rafa. I'm going to put Novak in there as well. Then I had Sampras and Andre, and then rounding it out with the human highlight reel of Alcaraz. as well, just for it's hard. Yeah, you need the entertainment value plus, yeah, some rivalries and then the greats. So, yeah, pretty similar.
It's hard in this one to go like that far outside of the box with randoms because it's like you got to pick the greats, the kings. All right, John, give us yours.
Yeah.
Anyone new?
Not really. I'm throwing Sampras in there. Roger, Rafa, Novak, Pete, Alcaraz. Give me Jimmy Connors.
Jimbo. Six. I like it. Yeah. All right.
109 titles.
Yeah, that's true. 109 titles. All right. Speaking of the Roger, Rafa, Novak, we threw in there a lot. We want to do a segment here for each of us. So it's the first time that you guys ever played Roger, first time you ever played Rafa, first time you ever played Novak. Which guy made you the most nervous the first time you played him? So go back and kind of give that story, I guess, and like the moment and which one made you nervous the most. Let me start. I'll go Isner first. Out of the big three, the first time you played each one of them, where were you the most nervous?
It was probably Roger because I played him right out of college. So, you know, I finished college in May and I played him at the U.S. Open like that, you know, a few months later. Course on Arthur Ashe, I would say Roger, but I don't know. I wasn't really like nervous. You have absolutely nothing to lose when you play these guys. So yes, it's a big occasion. It certainly wasn't the most nervous I've ever been in my career. But I would say Roger wasn't maybe nerves. I probably felt the most overwhelmed, like playing him in front of that, you know, in that stadium, in front of that crowd, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you won the first set too in a breaker.
Yeah, of course I did. And then I got, and then I lost 2-4 and 2 afterwards. Yeah, that was fun.
Where was the first time you played Rafa?
I think Roland Garros. When I took him to 5, I could be wrong there though. Yeah, I took it was 2011. I think that was the first time I played him. I could be wrong there, but I feel like that was.
First time playing Novak? Do you remember?
No, I can't.
You played Novak a bunch. I think you were 2-2 and 10 against him or something like that.
Did you or Sam ever play Rafa like in a Davis Cup tie?
Holy cow. I played Rafa twice before that that match.
Well, that proves your answer, that you weren't that nerd. Like, usually you would remember.
Yeah.
All right, let me go to Jack. Go back for your first time. Which guy made you most nervous, and what was the occasion?
Yeah, I think I had different. I think I had different feelings as well. Kind of like John said. I think definitely most overwhelmed by Roger. I'm trying to think. I don't think it was. It might have been 2017 Indian Wells in the semis. I don't know if that was the first time I played him. I think it was.
Yeah, you're way off.
Not even close.
It's like I am. Oh. Played him in 2015 Indian Wells before you played him in the semifinals.
Wow. And then I also played, I remember Basel, but okay. Yeah. I mean, but yeah, definitely Roger. Like I was most nervous. I was more like nervous, excited to play Roger because it's Roger, I think. And yeah, I don't know, just the aura he brings. I would say I was most nervous, like scoreline wise, actually to play Novak. I played him in a summer in the Master Series in Canada because I knew if he was playing well in my style of game versus his, I would get destroyed, which I did, like 2-2. So I think I was most nervous to get embarrassed tennis wise by Novak, and I was least nervous to play Rafa just because I actually felt like I could hang in there more / like have a chance.
You played Rafa tough every time, I feel like.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, I feel like we played similar opposite hands, Roger, just because of what he brings, the aura, like I said, and then Novak, just I didn't want to get embarrassed if he just made every single ball and every return, and then Rafa, but I only played Novak once and played Rafa a bunch, and yeah.
All right, Stevie, I want to guess yours. Stevie, I feel like you were most nervous playing Rafa in Madrid.
No. I mean, you think I'm going to win that match?
Why no, would I be nervous? But I feel like you'd be nervous to lose like 0-0.
Yeah. We don't think you're going to win any of these matches, by the way.
No, I'm just saying, but like if I would have lost 0-0, I would have been left the court and been like, yeah, okay.
I don't know, man.
0-0? No, like it's not that surprising. No, I mean, Isner was rooting for me to lose 0-0. I know that. He was the only time he's ever watched one of my matches.
I wanted you to, you had a mustache going, I wanted you to take center court in a mustache and lose 0-0. But then when you shaved the mustache, I wanted you to battle him like 6-4.
Oh, okay. All right, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But no, the most nervous I ever was playing Roger, more because it was the moment. I played him fourth round Wimby. And you guys know that walk out to center court at Wimbledon. Like, you're just walking by every piece of his memorabilia that he's won that tournament 50 times. So, like, you're walking by Roger's sweater vest and Waters, you know, his pants and that belt he wore and all the other stuff that he, like, donned over the years on the lawns of Wimbledon. And then you got to go out there and play him. So that was, like, the most nervous I was playing him for sure. But, I mean, yeah, it's tricky. I mean, and I played Novak at Cincy, which is, like, kind of a comfortable environment. I mean, can't get nervous in Cincy, can you?
You can get nervous anywhere, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The types of matches where I would get nervous in was like the smaller tournaments where I was like the heavy favorite in a lot of the matches I played. That's where, for me, like the nerves kicked in.
For sure.
So
way more so, like, because you are the draw of the tournament and you have to do well, or, you know, you're getting an appearance fee or whatever and you're supposed to win. That's always harder.
For me, it was Roger as well. First time I played him was Miami 2007. That was like prime Roger. And I remember the night before I went to go eat at Nobu and Roger was there. I probably didn't even know who I was at the time.
He didn't.
He didn't. I did not say hi to him either. But I remember I played him a night match in Miami. And remember when like Federer and Tiger Woods had that like friendship for all those years?
Yeah.
They go watch each other. Like Tiger Woods was in Roger's box. And it was like one of the first few times I played like a featured night match and lost like, I think it was 3-3 or 3-4, but not a close one. Roger would beat you 3-3 or 3-4, and it was not a close match. That was the equivalent of like Rafa beating you 1-1, but so nervous. Because the first time I played Novak, I think it was also 2007, and he wasn't like Novak yet. You know what I mean? I played him third round of Australia, and
he wasn't gluten-free yet.
He wasn't gluten-free yet, exactly. I played Rafa early, too, on a hard court. He wasn't as dominant on the hard court yet in 2006 in Cincinnati. So all of us really have the same answer. I mean, Federer, there was something about Federer, I feel like, that made everyone a little more nervous.
Did you or John play, like, Rafa and Davis Cup, like, in Spain ever or no?
Sam did.
Oh, you did? Like, 'cause I think that would be, like, a brutal, I mean, obviously for many reasons, but that would be, like, an insane, like, I'm in big trouble today.
I played him in Spain 2008. Like the week before, I played him at the US Open and lost in four sets. And then we were playing in Madrid with a little altitude and I won the first set. But even going into it, because I had lost to him in four tight sets at the US Open a week prior, I wasn't going in with like, I'm going to get blown out by this guy. I was like, all right, I played him a week ago and it like was kind of close. But you're right. There was a handful of people have taken absolute beatdowns from Rafa on the clay. And a few times playing Rafa on clay, I was, unlike Stevie, worried about getting like blown out, like maybe not 0-0, but 1-1 or 0-2 or something like that.
I do think what John said, though, there was a factor of like you have nothing to lose whatsoever, so the nerves weren't quite there. Like it was, you're not expected to win, so you're just kind of swinging free, hoping to just be like respectable out there.
Yeah, but I think the occasion always felt the biggest against Roger.
Yeah,
totally.
We're all trying to say,
it absolutely did. And I'm sure I'm sure if you pulled everyone in the top 100, kind of mostly our era, I bet most of the guys would say Roger was the one that made you most nervous.
But he also like could just take the racket out of your hands as well. Like that's like the part. Like you don't even get to play tennis against him sometimes.
Against Roger.
Yeah, because he just like, he'll come forward, he'll hit volleys, he just will miss a couple returns, but then ultimately he'll break you first or second game, and then just, you'll serve out a set, never lose a point, and all of a sudden you're like, it was 6-4, but it wasn't that close.
Yeah. He played quick too.
Yeah, he played super quick.
You had to match his cadence on the court. Like, I don't want to disrespect him, I'm going to get to the line to receive quick too, and he'd have those service games where he'd hold in a minute and 10 seconds.
It always felt like a matter of time against him.
yeah, exactly.
He played so quickly.
All those guys were brutal, but all right, that was interesting. I think a lot of people want to know, like, who makes you most nervous playing out of the big three, and I think for us and most people, Roger, definitely the answer. Today's episode of Nothing Major is brought to you by Gusto. No one starts a business to deal with payroll headaches. That's where Gusto comes in, taking the stress out of payroll, benefits, and HR so you can focus on what really matters. I actually use Gusto. I've been using it for years. Jack Sock also uses Gusto. We get paid from the PPA Pickleball Tour through Gusto, guys. We actually do. Gusto is an online payroll and benefits software built for small businesses. It's an all-in-one, remote-friendly, and incredibly easy to use. So you can pay, hire, onboard, and support your team from anywhere. It's quick and simple. Just switch to Gusto. Transfer your existing data to get up and running fast. Plus, you don't pay one penny until you run your first payroll. You also get unlimited payroll runs for one monthly price. No hidden fees, no surprises. Try Gusto today at gusto.com/nothingmajor and get 3 months free when you run your first payroll. That's 3 months of free payroll at gusto.com/nothingmajor. One more time, gusto.com/nothingmajor.
All right, now we got a special guest. We are very excited. Valentin Vacherot joins us on the pod for a special interview. You know, he's the Masters 1000 Shanghai champion. So we are going to get him on, talk some great stories, an incredible run. So let's get into it.
All right, everyone. It's time for a very, very special guest here on Nothing Major. We are welcoming to the pod the Shanghai Masters Series champion of this year, Valentin Vacherot, coming to us from Monaco. Val, welcome to the pod. Thank you so much for joining us. You're with Stevie, Jack. He's got the no strip in honor of you. Again, welcome to the pod, dude. I'm going to do a little intro. So Jack and I on this pod, we've both won a Master Series before, sort of out of nowhere. And I think you saw something like this maybe earlier in Miami this year when Min Sheik was a surprise winner in Miami. But what you did in Shanghai just last week, in our estimation, is the tennis story of the decade. Now, you're coming to us from Monaco. Has it really sunk in yet that you are an ATP Master Series champion where you're sitting right now talking to us?
I'm getting 5% every day, I feel like. like I'm getting 5% of seeing more and more every day. The more I do stuff, the more people greet me in the street. So yeah, it's of course far to be 100%, but I feel like the more I can not get at 100%, the better it is, so that I just enjoy everything that's happening right now.
Absolutely. You absolutely should enjoy it. You just took the tennis world on a ride that everyone loved. It was absolutely remarkable to see. So before the tournament, you texted a friend and you said, I'm maybe paraphrasing a little bit here, a sick run can come at any second, so I'm going to take my chance here in Shanghai. What made you send that? Did you really believe that that you were close to maybe doing something special, having a good result in a big tournament like a Shanghai?
So, I mean, just for a bit of context, last year I was really close to break top 100. I was 110 in May after French Open. I won three challengers to start the season. Started winning my first Masters 1000, winning a couple of matches down and there. So I went from like 290 to 110 in 4 months, and I got hurt for 6 months. And this year the difference is that I just made one challenger final in all that, but I had four top 50 win, and I was ranked 200. So I couldn't get like a few runs in a row in challengers. I couldn't understand. And this summer, I knew with my ranking this summer I was 200, 250. And I told one of my old teammates at A&M, I said, yeah, I know that with those big draws now in Master 1000, if you're 200 in Shanghai, you can get in because it drops a bit more. It's a bit far. And I said, yeah, I mean, I think Shanghai could be a good one to play whatever, even if just I was just going to play just Shanghai to just do the round trip, because it's the only big tournament I was going to get to play maybe towards the end of the season. So I was like, yeah, this is like kind of my goal. I thought I was going to get in the quarters way easier than I got into the quarters. But yeah, this is another story that is pretty funny as well. Yeah,
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was a good segue for my next question. I believe when you landed in Shanghai, you were 9 out of qualies. Now, at that stage, did you think, holy crap, I just flew all the way to China and I'm not going to get into this tournament? Were you a little bit worried there? Or were you confident that you were going to ultimately get into qualifying?
I mean, when the list came out 3 weeks before, I was even 22 out. And when I checked the list of the year before, I would have been 4 out with my ranking. So I was like, wow, like way more player wants. I have the same idea as me this year. I flew. I landed Thursday evening. I was night out, but I know Shanghai is close to the end of the season. Guys that have a few injuries, don't take risk. I knew that there was a big chance. Even everyone was telling me, yeah, I think you're still going to get in. You're going to get in. And yeah, I got in about, I think, 36 hours before. So, like, not too bad. I wasn't the last one. I think two more guys got in behind me. So, yeah. But anyway, I was like, okay, even if I don't get in, I was going to play 4 more challengers behind. I was like, I'm just going to use 1 week of training on site here with all the, you know, good guys. So it wouldn't even have been like just like a nightmare to just not get in and just go back home. So yeah, that's a bit of the story here.
So if you didn't get into the Shanghai qualities, were you going to stay like in China and play challengers? You know, what was the schedule like after? So there was zero hesitation, even though you were 20 plus out, you weren't sure you were going to get in. Like there was no hesitation at all to go over there?
No hesitation at all. No hesitation from my coach because as I said, I was going to play 4 or 5 more. I mean, I'm signed up for the next 3 weeks still in challengers that I've just been putting out one after one. It was
just
like
take those fines. You'll probably be okay.
like 3 more in China, one in South Korea, and maybe even I had even one more in Japan in mind. So yeah, I mean, when I left, I said goodbye to my family, my friends for a month and a half. I mean, who knows that 2 weeks later I was just like, just come back home with the title.
It's truly unbelievable. Sorry, let's dive into the actual tournament. Obviously, everyone knows you get into qualies. You lose the first set in both your qualies matches. In your second round qualifying match against Liam Draxel, another college tennis product who played at the University of Kentucky, you were 2 points from losing that match. End up winning, of course, getting into the main draw. Then you win 7 matches in the main draw, and it culminates with, I haven't even mentioned this part yet, which makes the story even crazier, playing your cousin, Arthur Rinderknecht, in the final. Describe what that was like. In your wildest dreams, could you ever imagine like playing your cousin in a final of a big tournament like this?
No, like we never even talked about that. Like even when we were younger, we didn't even talk about just... I mean, at some point, like during my career, I wonder when's the first time I'm going to play Arthur. That's going to be so funny for the family. I was going to be like, okay, maybe it's maybe going to be in the first round of a 250 when I get up a little bit and we play the same tournament. Or there's the huge challengers now, 175, that even if you're ranked 50, 60, you play sometimes. Or maybe in one of those. I mean, just not the absolute surreal, unreal scenes to just even, yeah, I mean, at some point, you're like, what are we doing here? Like, what is going on? Is like during the final. And yeah, like just the whole build up to the final, knowing that I played Arthur for the like maybe 15, 16 hours before was just, yeah, it's just so crazy.
Well, yeah, you guys shared such a beautiful moment on the court after he won his semifinal match. You walked on the court, gave him a hug. I think that was just amazing for everyone to see. You guys clearly do love each other, your college tennis teammates, cousins. It's just such a remarkable story. What is the you mentioned the family summit. What is the family group chat like, if you have one? Or what was it like maybe before the match, and what was it like after the match?
Let's say that he actually got way more calm. Once we knew, our family is huge in tennis. There's like actually not just both of us playing tennis. Like there's coaches right and left. Arthur's mom was 200. Everyone's been a part of tennis, like just like coaching, being a part of just even in like businesses of tennis, blah, blah, blah. And just, I feel like once the moment we knew that we were going to play each other in finals, just, I feel like the family just gave us space and kind of the group chat kind of like calmed down so much. And it was more like before win after win that everyone was going crazy, just sending videos, jumping around when we were both in the quarterfinal, both in semifinals. And when it got closer to the final and even after, it got just more like just thanking us for just what happened, like, other than just saying more. There's just nothing else to say, I think, for them.
Your coach is your half brother. You're playing your cousin in the final. I don't think we're ever going to see anything like that in tennis again. Just a full family affair out there had to be obviously surreal and special. But more on the competitive side of it. You're out there. It's probably very weird, kind of awkward at times playing your cousin. But at what point, or was there a point where you're playing the match against Arthur where you're like, yeah, it's awesome. This is a full, you know, family affair out here, but I want the points. I want the check. You know, I want everything that comes with it. Was there a switch at all during that? Or was it just like, we're going to go out and play and just enjoy the moment? Or was there that side of it? Like, hey, like, I'm going to take these points. I want to take this money as well.
I think straight away when you won against Daniel in the, like, my heart like bummed the most when the last game against Medvedev in the semifinal for the whole 2 weeks. Like, I never got more stressed than the last game of Arthur against Medvedev, to just like know that if he wins that, like, we're gonna play each other in the final. Like, I teared up so much at that moment, and I didn't want to go on court at the beginning because it's also his moment. I mean, he was 55 in the world making the final of a Master 1000. This is just first before my story. This is crazy also to be just 55 and make the final of 1000. I didn't want, but his friend that was there just like literally took me and like just go on court. This is an unreal moment. And after for an hour, it was more like excitement. But then when I got to the hotel, when the first thing I talked with my girlfriend is like, I think for everyone and like for respect of like the sport, I think we're just going to both play at 115% and just play some Masters final. If I played any other guy on tour in the final across the net. And actually a lot of people thanked me after the final for like both of us for like playing full and just like screaming, pumping, fist bumping, looking at box. If it was a normal match. And yeah, I think that's another thing I'm pretty proud of, is like we actually played like a full normal like master final. Yeah. But the other tough things is that I know him by heart, and he probably knows me by heart, even in the tennis part, because he's the guy that I watch the most. I watch him more than Alcaraz and Sinner, because even if he plays the first round of a 250, I don't know where. If I'm not doing anything, I'm just going to put the phone on the side and watch his match, because it's my cousin first of all, so I know exactly what he does in some moments. So I think that's the part where it was the toughest.
Yeah. Well, that for sure. Going back to the actual run, as I mentioned, you won 9 matches en route to the title. At what point in the tournament did you think, wait a second, I could be onto something really big, as opposed to, oh yeah, this is a pretty nice run, I'm happy about it? At what point in that tournament did you think, wait a minute, I can keep going and I can do something super special here?
It got crazy when I beat Talon Grigsport in the round of 16. And I didn't know like any of the ranking I was going to be before. I have this ritual that I just look at the end of the tournament which ranking I'm going to be. Like, I don't look like win after wins. But media started digging, oh, if he wins this next match, he breaks top 100. So I started seeing that and all. And that's why the one against Rune was really special. And I had way more emotions, let's say, after Rune than after Novak in the semifinal. But I think it was, then this is another story, just more like about like respect for Novak, let's say. But yeah, let's say, I would say after the round of 16, I knew that I was on something big. But what's crazy is I never thought about winning the tournament until I was in the final. Like, I never thought about it in 1 second.
That's good. Well, you definitely... you did more than just break into the top 100. You broke into the top 50. You're sitting at number 40 in the world right now from 204. Yeah. I don't think we've ever seen a jump like that in tennis. Again, absolutely remarkable. Huge congrats to you. Roger Federer was in the house.
Yeah.
All right. What was that like? Did you see him? Did that put more pressure on you, or did that inspire you to play even better than you already were during the course of the tournament?
But first of all, he was here for 5 days, the last 5 days, and I think for the first 4 days, my girlfriend saw him 15 times, and I saw him at nowhere. I could not see him. I could not cross him. I was only seeing him far away playing. They made this putt-putt 18 hole next to the player restaurant, and he was playing. I wasn't going to go out there and just shake his hand. Like, I was waiting for the moment to just cross him all of a sudden. I could not cross him. And my girlfriend crossed him 15 times, and I was going crazy until the moment I actually walked on the court to warm up the morning of the match against Arthur. He came out of the door of the tunnel, and I was coming in, and he made this huge even for him, like, oh, finally I see you. And yeah, like, so that's when we just talked for 20 seconds at a moment I was going to warm up. But yeah, then he was here for the whole final, and yeah, to just maybe talk about that later. But then I spent 45 minutes with him on the celebration after in the player restaurant. I was just like, even like, yeah, the cherry on top of this whole week. Yeah,
that's great. Okay, so I got one more for you. So from one great, obviously, to another all-time great. We talked about Novak Djokovic, or you spoke about playing him in the semifinals. What was that like for you to beat, hands down, the greatest tennis player of all time in the semifinals of a Master Series 1000?
I don't know. I cannot put like any word on it. I mean, first of all, it's the match where the stadium was the most packed. I mean, Novak has such an aura in Asia. They love him over there. I think he loves this tournament more than anything. He won it like five times or something. The noise it made when he walked on court, I was all of those matches I was obviously working first on the court, and when working first on the court, and when he came in, like, I think the stadium just like screamed all at once. It was just crazy for me. Like, I had absolute goosebumps at that moment, and it's the match where I had the most respect for my opponent. Like, I was like almost not at someone, I'm not feeling back for him. He had of course a few physical issues, but yeah, I had to stay so focused and not like look at him. I was almost at some points wanting to say, are you okay? Like, are you okay? Like, doing something, like, maybe not that bad, but like it was just crazy to be facing him. And yeah, I think my reaction at the end of the match says all. Like, I had so much respect for him. I didn't even want to say a word. I didn't even want to say a word at the net. I just let him speak. And at the end, I said just a few words. But yeah, it was like, first of all, just to step on court to play him was just such a honor. And I mean, beating him, I can't even like, even some people here told me, you beat Djokovic. They don't even tell me you won the tournament, but they say, you beat Djokovic. You beat Djokovic. And I'm like, yes, yeah. I know. Yeah, I know. It sounds pretty crazy. I left, I was 204, and I come back and I beat Djokovic, and I'm 4 in the world. And it's just in the span of 15 days. And yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's remarkable. I mean, for you guys, how does your, I mean, I don't know what this feels like. I mean, three of the four of us in this recording right now have won Master Series. I don't know what it's like to be in the finals of one. Are you more nervous because you're playing your cousin in the final? Are you more at ease because you're playing Arthur, somebody you're super familiar with? Was that like a positive, or did that make you more nervous playing Arthur in the final?
I mean, actually, like, on the court, I think Arthur dealt better with that better at it with me. He was serving bombs like right on the line that I couldn't even get to for a set and a half. He was serving so well, and yeah, I was pretty disappointed of myself. I feel like I was getting a bit into the hole I knew Arthur was gonna play. Yeah, actually, like, yeah, it was happening. He was playing that way, and I couldn't manage to just turn it around, or just not focus on what he was doing. That was so good. Yeah,
I saw video as well of you meeting the Prince of Monaco. How was that experience? And did you expect that, or how'd that come about?
Well, I don't know if you guys know that, but the Prince is huge into sport, and he competed in the Winter Olympics in probably 40 years ago. He was doing bobsleigh, kind of like the huge sledge. So like, he's a huge athlete. And yeah, so I knew him before. He comes to watch us in Davis Cup. Like, we have those little like 800 people stands in Davis Cup, and it's so funny when he comes because he's just sitting in the middle of that. There's like no, there's like no VIP seats or anything. He's just sitting in the middle with just everyone. We have like a couple hundred people that comes to watch us at home every time. So he comes to watch us. Our doubles player Romain Arnaudo won the Master 1000 of Monte Carlo this year in doubles also. So yeah, we're just a few players, but have like amazing achievements now, and he's always there when we do good. So it wasn't the first time for me to meet him. And yeah, I mean, I feel like he was so emotional. Like I could see like his eyes were red. Like when we have also Charles Leclerc in F1, I don't know if you guys know F1, the Superb, I mean, he's the best athlete ever from Monaco. And he won for the first time the Grand Prix in Monaco last year, and the prince was crying on the podium. So whenever great stuff happens in sport for the country, he gets pretty emotional. So yeah, it was like the surprise celebration at the country club yesterday night, where he was there, all the media from Monaco were there, and every single people from the country club that I know, because I started playing at the country club when I was 7-8 years old, so I know everyone since about 20 years now. So yeah, last night was probably the most special. Yeah.
Have you seen if the check has hit the account yet? Do you look at that? Have you had any fun? Have you any fun purchases or anything since the tournament, or just laying low?
No. I haven't looked, and sometimes this is actually the last thing I think I thought about when after the match. Like, it's pretty crazy. The last thing I thought is like, oh my god, like I just won that, but what's the prize money like? And then it's funny. Then you know you go on PDF, you check the draw, and you have like prize money each round. I went to see it. And I was like, $1.1 million. I'm like, I was actually more like stressed about it. I'm like, what am I gonna do with that? Like, this is too much.
It's good to see two commas when you get to when you get the prize money.
Yeah, commas are good.
This is too much. But then I was like, okay, this is already 915 euros. There's going to be 20% on it. My coach. That's my coach deserves so much. I mean, he went. Not gonna lie, he went from coaching Gilles Müller and Pierre-Hugues Herbert before to coaching me. So yeah, so. Went from coaching guys that are 20 to 30 in the world to me trying to break in the top 100. So yeah, he deserves also a good part of that. But then also, I mean, straight away I told my parents, you guys coming to Melbourne in January. So yeah, I was more thinking of what I was going to do for my career for it than just like actually like do a purchase. But yeah, no, actually, like, didn't think of it at all. To be honest, it's probably gonna go also into the vacation with my girlfriend. We're just thinking about the ideas today. But yeah, no, but actually, it's funny. I just bought a car for like pretty cheap right before this tournament, and people were telling me, oh, you're gonna buy yourself a car. So I'm like, no, I just bought one. Like, I'm not gonna just. Let it go just because I want that. Like I need to use it. Yeah, but yeah, no, pretty funny. Yeah.
What's next for Mr. Vacherot and or for Val? What, schedule wise or your mindset now after this, and obviously for your tennis, for your career? Maybe give us a little insight on your plan and everything going forward.
Well, yeah, I mean, coming back a bit more to reality tomorrow, I'm going to just start the gym again tomorrow, tennis again on Friday, since I got that, as I said, Mandro wild card in Basel. So that's really cool. Waiting to see if I get one in Paris, hopefully. I mean, even if they give me a qualies one, 100% take it. And then I will see if I play one of those two 250 after that, or if I just finish after Paris, if I get a wild card. And then yeah, I mean, something also we talked about. I think it's amazing that it's happening really close to the end of the season. So I'm gonna have like a bunch of time to just like swallow it, like realize what happened, and actually like prepare 2026 because I'm gonna go from playing challengers to the third week into 2026, play a best out of three that I've only played one match in my life last year. So at least I'm going to have more time to prepare, also more time to rest a little bit and just put my brain into the right place to just think about what happened and just get back at it and play all those tournaments that I just dreamed to play my whole life. And actually, we laughed. We said, yeah, I mean, no more just brainstorming about which challengers. There's six a week all over the world, and you're just thinking, yeah, which one am I gonna play, where, okay, how many in a row. There's sometimes challengers you can go like six in a row and you're just not even thinking about like stopping, and now yeah, it's actually gonna look more like a real schedule, not even thinking like we can make it again, maybe think about two different 250. Okay, is it going to be Hong Kong or Brisbane? I mean, yeah, really, really easy to make the decisions. And yeah, I mean, this is just so, I'm just so looking forward also to next year and play for the first time in my life all those events. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Something tells me that you won't need many wild cards next year in 2026. Being 40 in the world. Yep. You're going to be direct into everything. That's awesome. All right. So Shanghai and win the tournament. This is a little hot seat segment. Okay. Who's the first person you called after the match, after the match point, after you won Shanghai?
As you guys know, you guys won way more huge title than me, so you know how it works. I did about an hour of press. I spent an hour on the court. So yeah, and actually, like, other crazy thing, I think I walked into the player restaurant where all the tournament directors were already celebrating because they needed also to just let it go, and Roger was there waiting as well. And so I was like, did Roger just wait for me 2 hours to have a little bit of time with me? And that was also crazy. And yeah, so I got all this time with Roger. I didn't check my phone, I think, for 3 hours. And I mean, of course, the two first person that I called is my mom and my dad. I just went outside for a little bit, just got out of the music a bit. And yeah, funny story, they were not together for those 2 weeks. My dad went to visit another part of the family that's in Paris. So it was pretty good as well. I always had two phone calls to make, and it was making it a bit more special to just actually talk to like both of them. And yeah, it took 10 minutes to talk to both of them. And if I'm right, is the only two that I called that night. And then I was just waiting to get back and see everyone. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for me, were you more nervous when you trying to meet Roger Federer or going out there to compete against Novak Djokovic?
I mean, Novak was already, like, every single match there's also the story of, I played Grigspor, but when I win the third round and I'm like, yes, I'm going to play Yannick in the round of 16. And I was like, yes, I'm going to play Sinner in the round of 16. And let's say I was kind of like telling my girlfriend, this is the perfect and like not like almost like end of the story of my tournament. not gonna lie, this came out and she's so good with that. She's American. She's like, you know, you guys are so good for the positive attitude and like all those not saying those negative stuff. And she's like, what do you mean to like stop the tournament? what do you mean? And then actually, like, I went to watch on that match the first set tiebreak, and against Talon the level was so high, even Talon was playing so great, so even in the end I wasn't that like really surprised that he found a way to win. And I didn't even follow the live score in the second set and third set until we opened it, and we have a picture of reaction of like seeing that Sinner retired, and we had no idea. And all of a sudden I'm like, wow, like, okay, so then I have my chance in the round of 16. So yeah, and wait, sorry, I got a bit lost. What was the question again?
Were you more nervous to meet Roger or to play Novak?
Oh yeah. And so coming back to the fact that so every single match after Grigspor for me, because Grigspor I really thought I could win, the fact that I was thinking I was going to play Yannick, it was such a bonus that I was working on a court more like the eyes of a kid playing on center court of a Master 1000 quarterfinal and then semifinal. So all those matches were such bonus to me that, and it also helped me so much to play free. And of course, everything was not easy. I had some tight moment in the match where I was really stressed, but even physically where my fitness was good, but some moments were pretty hard. But just meeting Roger, I just didn't know what to say. Some moments I was even like mumbling a little bit. But of course, probably spoke 90% of the time. I just listened to him, and he said such cool stuff. Even gave me like one or two tips. Even more stressed to just probably speak to Roger than moment I stepped on court. Of course, there's moment during the match where I got pretty shaky against Novak. I mean, to serve for it and everything. But yeah, I mean, the outside part of the actual matches of meeting Roger and just playing Novak was just crazy.
Kind of a two-parter for me. because I mean, I was fairly superstitious at times, and in that Paris run, I had the same meal every night as well.
My girlfriend is laughing over there, getting on the superstitious stuff.
Yeah. Did you have anything that was something you kept doing throughout the whole run that you believed in to keep going?
I stayed about, so yeah, the 2 weeks, that's 14 days plus the three before 17 times. So let's say triple that in terms of showers. I showered about 50 times in the same shower in the locker room.
Exact same shower. Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah,
that's
good.
Yeah, 50 times a shower. Like, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you guys play Shanghai. The trip from the hotel is about an hour, so it's pretty long in the tournament. Same seat every single ride in the car, middle right.
If someone was in the seat, did you ask them to move?
Well, no, because really quickly, you know, even after qualifying, we say, oh, we just after two matches, we say we don't. Even if you're in the qualification, you were getting just one car just for you and your team. That's actually like, doesn't happen in every tournament. There's like no bus or anything. Then after, it was just like routine. It was middle right for me. Middle left for my coach, and middle left for my girlfriend, back for my coach. Then my fitness coach joined me for the made him flew for to see the semifinal against Novak. Other story, he came just for the semifinal and final. So he just took the front. So yeah, it's every single same seat for some people, and so that's some good ones. I think that's enough.
Yeah, we've talked about it a lot, kind of in China. Everybody kind of has like a super fan. Did you have one? Did somebody kind of come up to you? Did you get any weird gifts, like anything that you brought home with you? I'm sure you must have one now after winning the title.
Yeah, I got a few little dolls. I mean, not dolls, but they love, like there's like La Boubou's now. I don't know if you guys know that. I had no idea yeah. what it is. Yeah, I mean, my girlfriend just sent one to me like this one. And my duffel bag was like falling because of like stuff hanging from it. And to say about the people, two person from Monaco were here, started singing the anthem of Monaco after the quarterfinal. So I was like, what are you guys doing here?
That's awesome.
What are you guys doing here? Those two guys, and actually this is the only two guys from the public that I let them touch the trophy. At the end, they were here. We gave them tickets for the final because they didn't have any. So, and the flag that I have on the court, I got it from them.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think those awesome. Two are the ones that I have in mind.
Again, last question for you. So if they were to turn your Shanghai run, your Shanghai tournament into a movie.
Well, that's a good question.
That's a tough one to put on the spot there.
Give us the name of the movie.
Well, I think the fairy tale is perfect. I think.
Yeah, that is perfect. We like that.
Yeah,
that was beautiful.
I didn't think about that at all. Yeah, of course, a lot of people they should make a movie about that. This is never gonna happen.
The fairy tale. We like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm first of all, tennis is just my passion. I'm not playing just for the money. What is this? Yeah, I'm seeing you guys that are watching TV. It's great.
Well, we appreciate it. Like, I don't know. Greg Sharko was speaking to Benjamin, your coach, mm-hmm. your half brother, and he said that Benjamin told Greg Sharko that you might be interested in coming on the pod, and like it was a slam dunk for us. So look, you've been so accommodating, and we appreciate your time so much. This is absolutely amazing. All right, Valentin Vacherot, thank you so much for joining us here at Nothing Major. We so appreciate your time. Massive congrats. We're all so happy for you. Good luck in Basel. Good luck in hopefully Paris.
Hopefully.
Enjoy your off season, buddy, and you know, keep getting after it. Thank you.
Yep. Congratulations.
Val, thanks, buddy.
Thank you so much, you guys. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thanks to Val for joining us on today's show. Such a good interview, such good insight from somebody who jumps from 204 to 40 in the world after a Masters Series title. An incredible run. And thank you to him for giving us the time to have that fun interview.
All right. Well, that's what we got. And as always, we are Nothing Major. We're on X, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, at Nothing Major Show. Give us a follow, a like. Let us know if you guys have anything that the fans, you guys like want to like know about that you feel like we haven't hit, let us know. But we'll see everyone on Monday.